again, we're on a tight schedule. Mayor, you have to be, you're done by 6, right?
Yeah, and we need to go into executive session at 5:30.
Very good. So,
the agenda we can modify, Vice Mayor.
Is Mayor speaking? Because I cannot hear him.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Okay, then for some reason I can hear everybody except him.
Dale Paverka is now on.
Oh, good. Dale's here?
Yes, Dale is here.
Oh, I see Dale now. I see his tie.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
I can hear you. I can see your shirt.
Full purple jacket this time, guys.
Oh, very good. Well, it looks like everybody's aboard. Kathleen's coming and going.
I'm here. I can hear you all, but you're all frozen, just so you know that, so I can hear you.
And we can hear you. At least I can hear you, but your box is
frozen.
Dark. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, we don't want to waste much time, everybody. So I think we'll get the meeting started. Hopefully, get things ironed out with some of the members. Welcome to everyone to the Strategic Planning Committee. This is our third Strategic Planning meeting of the year on Tuesday here, May 26th. And Debbie, will you please call the roll?
Grendel?
Here.
Kapusta?
Here.
Nardisi?
Here.
Sinek?
Here.
Trakas? Vavirka?
Here.
Walt Chanowitz?
Here.
Very good. We're all here. And again, in continuing with the talk with the mayor, we're going to be going till 5:30 and then adjourning this meeting and going into executive session, hopefully as quickly as possible after that. I know we have a stop time at 6 o'clock. That's when the mayor will be leaving the executive session. So without further ado, we're going to pick up with the agenda that we received over the weekend. And again, we're going to update any further information from last week regarding the administration's plan moving forward from June to the end of the year regarding city events and also some of the programs that we offered the youth as well as the seniors and everyone as far as residents go. Mayor, I'll let you have the floor.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. And by the way, thank you for everyone that participated in the Memorial Day ceremony yesterday. It was appropriate for the different situation we're dealing
Debbie,
with.
Debbie, since I can't hear Mayor, is there anything else I could do?
Can you try going back out and going back in again?
4 times.
Can you try calling on your phone then?
Okay, hold on. What call, what number? The one that's on the...
The one that's on the invitation.
Okay, I'll do that.
Chris Walchanowicz lives pretty close to you. That bedroom looks pretty big. Maybe you can social distance in there and listen.
I'll take my chance to stay here.
You're a funny man. My name's Richard. She can hear you, just she can't hear me, that's all.
Put the finance director on mute. Sorry.
Only if you don't want the money, right?
There you go. Request on.
Oh, wait, maybe we'll need some money. Never mind.
Until Kathleen gets here, I do want to just say, stay focused on some of this. This is a strategic planning session. It's meant to address where we're going in the future. And so some of the different items can be briefly gone over through with my department heads. But I think for the most part, we'll focus on where we're going as a community. And then that's something that I can assure you, well, I'll wait till Kathleen's on for that. We'll suspend some of the aspects of this agenda because they deal with because the strategic planning should focus on big picture items and we can get in the weeds on some of these issues at some other time with legislation or some other way to navigate through that. But I'd like to think in the future strategic planning will revolve around long-term strategies, whether they be economic development, whether they be events, whether they be some of the different places we're going in the future. But for right now, We have an agenda, so we'll try to get through that quickly. I know Councilman Sinek needs a few minutes reserved for his for that one line item. And we should be able to get through the rest of it pretty quickly so that we can meet our 5:30 executive session, which is very important. Is Kathleen, tell me when you're on, Kathleen.
She's off right now.
Okay.
I think for future reference to Mary Ann Vern, this is important. I'd like to have a finance meeting sometime in June, whether it be before or so you and I have to get together, pick it in, coordinate with Ken and with Dale, but actually hold a council so we move along the timeline that you've set up and able to, you know, you gave us some information regarding our debt and everything too. So I'd like to schedule a meeting. Fellas, look at your schedule. Let us know if there's any vacation time that you're not going to be here, but we're looking at a Tuesday in June. Of course, not including the our second Tuesday.
Okay, sure.
Kathleen? Still frozen.
We can. You're muted, Kathleen, but we can see you.
Unmute.
There she is.
I'm okay. It wouldn't unmute at first either. It was like sticking, but okay. I heard Mayor speak now.
Let's okay, we're good to go, everyone.
Good to go, Mayor.
Again. We have we've had several people from other school board members and the superintendents on as a courtesy if we need to ask any questions. But for the most part, we're going to focus on our agenda and then go from there. So moving forward, the first item on the agenda is moving forward with the what's our plan for the rest of the year in terms of events. We have the rec director and the community service director online. I talked to the superintendent as late as this afternoon. I talked to our teams in the various departments. We are looking closely at the summer programs with our children, and we are getting closer to finalizing those plans so that we can articulate those to the community, to the parents, to those that have signed up. We have over 100 people that have signed up on the various programs, and we are through the generosity and the cooperation with the schools, they're willing to open not only portions of the high school, but they're also willing to open up portions of the middle school to facilitate these programs, because we normally run some of the programs out of the Civic Center, but in all fairness to the seniors, the schools are willing to give us the ability to balance that by opening aspects of the middle school. So that's exciting, and it gives the team some flexibility to determine if we can still facilitate these programs, meet the state's guidelines and mandates, be able to train our people, have enough staff on board for our own safety and the safety of our community group leaders. And so once we complete that analysis, we will make sure we articulate that to members of council and to the community itself. Any questions on that relative to, well, that's relative to the summer programs for the children. As I mentioned, we are looking at the time frame for opening up the Civic Center. I'll divert to Recreation Director Tom Walchanowicz to give you an overview of some of the tentative timetable. Tom?
Okay, yeah, what we're looking at as far as the Civic Center goes is opening most of the building next Monday, which is June 1st. Once we get all of our protocols in place and all of our safety measures taken care of, what we're looking at is June 1st for opening of the Civic Center. Now, that will not include the gymnasium, and it does not include the community service side of the building. And our atrium obviously has to be a pass-through. We technically, from the governor's guidelines, can't open the atrium, so we're not going to have chairs in there. So what we basically want is people to come in, use the building as they need, whether it's the indoor swimming pool or the workout facility upstairs or the aerobic programs, and then exit the building. At this point, we don't want the people to hang inside the building and congregate. So that's our plan for this building going forward.
Tom, are you going to limit it to a certain number of people? And if so, how are you going to, you know, inform? I mean, that only so many people can use the facility at one time?
Well, again, like I said at the last meeting, we're fortunate that we have a large building for a smaller population. So we, and then couple that with this time of the year is our slower time. So when we look back at our records from years past during the month of June, July, and August, our numbers those are our lowest volume numbers. And I mean, we're going to keep close watch on it. We know what the number is, and for each room, we will not exceed it. But we don't even think we're going to come close to exceeding the number. And again, we will not allow the non-resident guests to come into the building at least for the next 3 months.
Tom, are you going to have the locker rooms and showers shut down too?
Yes, the indoor showers will be shut down. The restrooms will still be open, but the lockers are going to be off too.
Okay. We'll follow a thank you. And the pool?
Yeah, the pool's going to be open, and that's one of the, we will have sign up for lanes. So that's one of the things that we're going to say to call in ahead of time. That's one thing that we may get up towards our maximum is in the pool. So that is going to be a call ahead.
Okay, and what about the outdoor pool, Tom?
Right now, we're looking at around June 15th to open that facility. We think if we get 2 weeks of operation under our belt with this facility, that we can safely open that pool June 15th.
Okay, we'll communicate this to the community as we see that we can achieve those goals that by the state, as well as disinfectant. We'll be responsible for disinfecting all our facilities, including the school facilities, if we're able to use those. And so we'll be in a position to be able to maintain not only guidelines by the state, but the policies the city has in place for hygiene and sanitation. Yeah, Jim.
Thank you, Mayor. Tom, how do you maintain social distancing in a pool setting?
In the indoor pool, we're going to use lane lines, and we're going to have lanes for lap swimming, and then we'll have other lane lines and rope buoys to keep, like if there's open swimming, if a family wants to come in, we're going to have the pool kind of segregated out.
There'll be lifeguards there, Tom?
Yes. Yes, we'll have lifeguards, and then we'll probably have an extra person around just making sure everyone is social distancing.
Very good.
How are you, Tom?
Tom, when you have, let's say, a five-person family, they don't need 6 feet. Is there a way to delineate if it's a family that could be together as compared to an individual that can't be with the family?
Yes, individual families will allow to be closer than 6 feet, and that's why we're going to probably have an extra person. So when we see these people walking in, we're going to kind of get a visual of families. And also, one of the rules we're going to put in place is you have to be with a parent if you're, I think the age we set now is under 14. So 14 and under, you can't just ride your bike up here and just come in the building. You have to be with your family. And it's going to be the same way at the outdoor facility, at least at the beginning.
So there are a number of different protocols that are going to be put in place. We don't want to spend a lot of time on in the weeds on this right now because we're still working through things. But by all means, if you have any questions beyond this meeting, just get sent an email and we'll get you some answers right away. But those are the tentative dates. Any other questions on that?
And one other one in terms of the question on the pool. You know, Tom, we switched over from using chlorine to that UV product in the indoor pool. I thought I read that state saying that you had to use chlorine. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, we even though we have the UV disinfection system, it's also backed up with the chlorine. So even all the time we use chlorine also. So it's a dual system now of both the UV and the chlorine. So yes.
That's acceptable to the state standard, what we're doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll follow the County Board of Health, we'll follow the state, we'll be following all the protocols. And if you have any more questions, by all means, just send an email and we'll be more than happy to address them and we'll address them back to everybody. COVID-19 for the City of Independence. Greg O'Brien, legal ramifications. Is there any exposure or anything that we need to, other than you've gone through our release and the protection that we parents are signing for their children and different release we have for the different participants in our facilities. My understanding is those meet a high threshold. Is there anything else we need?
Mayor, I think if you follow the CDC, the state, and the County Board of Health relative to each particular activity, and what I mean by that, there's certainly different guidelines for your, I'll just call it your gym, that gyms have to follow versus your swimming pools and swimming pools versus your child, I'll just call it child care as a general. As long as we're following those unique in those situations and we enforce them, it has to be a dual system, right? It's got to make sure that we, you know, we have them on paper and our staff is trained on them and we're implementing them. I like the person roving around, make sure that we're doing it. We should be fine. Again, it's going to be very difficult for someone to sustain a lawsuit, improve proximate cause where they, if they do, unfortunately, you know, incur the COVID-19 infection. We could do, and I talked to Tom about this. This is certainly, you know, kind of maybe a belt and suspenders. We could put together some signage at the entrance of buildings, letting them know that we do follow these, but we don't guarantee that they assume the risk by entering them. That's really going to be kind of a business call on your part. We don't want to obviously heighten the fear, but we want people to know. I've been asked and can develop certain waivers if that's practical. The waivers we have now, I think, are sufficient. But for like voluntary coaches, if we're going to go forward with baseball programs or whatever, I can beef up and provide a more robust waiver that coaches would sign and maybe participants would sign. I don't think it's practical, if we open up our parks when someone signs up for a tennis court, to make sure and have someone go out there and make sure that we have a waiver for each individual resident using it. Because some may just come as quote unquote guests of someone. But,
okay. So it sounds to me like you've reaffirmed that our current system and protocols, and as well as the different waivers that the people sign or we have on file, be more than sufficient in terms of protecting the city.
Yes, but as long as everybody understands, you know, there's a lot of plaintiff slurs out there, but I think they'll be spinning in the wind if they actually try to file a lawsuit against the city.
Well, I do know that for the benefit of council and those that are participating today, that we stress every communication with the REC and the Community Services Department. We stress that these facilities will only open if David can assure me that we have an adequate system in place to prevent and hygiene as well as disinfecting facilities. And so that's a high priority throughout the entire community.
And one more thing, Mayor, and this is, you know, thanks to Councilperson Trakas, he sent over House Bill 606, being sponsored by Dave's cousin, Diane Grendel. It's in committee now, but in that body of that House bill, Ohio would adopt immunity for any COVID, and certainly the city's within the definition of that immunity. It has not passed. I'm sure some of you know the U.S. Senate, the Republican Party is requesting that, and that may come on a national basis. So those will provide two, hopefully one will take hold and be passed, provide two possible additional protections.
Thank you. We have the ramifications of the COVID-19 and the city safety forces and emergency services protocols. Chief Riga, do you want to address that?
Yeah, sure, Mayor. Well, you know, we're kind of on the front lines of this, and since the beginning, we ramped up personal protective use quite substantially. The guys through CDC recommendations, our Medi-Control recommendations, are wearing N95 masks on all calls, and we have additional protocol if we're dealing with a suspected COVID or a confirmed COVID case. So that's kind of how we've been working from the beginning. We're constantly, for a while, they're getting updated on protocols. One thing's for sure, they've reinforced the fact that nothing really changed since day one to now as far as how we're supposed to social distance in the station, how we're supposed to treat patients moving forward. We definitely, one of the things that we changed that's a little bit significant is that per protocol, if a patient does have COVID symptoms but they're mild, that patient will probably stay at home to, you know, get care from their personal care physician, and there was a release form that had to be put in place for that type of situation. So, you know, we've adapted to that. We continue to watch our PPE supplies, and we're looking at our burn rates and how much we have and what we need moving forward, trying to anticipate any, you know, additional upswing of this virus or not. So that's primarily what we've been trying to do, is just stay ahead of needs and what we need to do.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Chief Kilbane, our protocols and safety issues that in the police department, are we still sanitizing the vehicles between shifts and making sure that we have enough equipment or PPE for our people?
Absolutely, Mayor. Thanks to Chief Riga of the fire department. They pointed us in the right direction for some equipment that we can use to sterilize our cruisers between every shift. Also, just like Steve, we are making sure we have a sufficient supply of PPE issued to all the officers, and we have a just-in-case stockpile in case there is a big spike or a major incident. Other than that, we've made some adjustments in our patrol tactics to minimize contact with folks as much as possible. We're doing a lot of business via email and phone for investigative stuff that we would previously do in person. And additionally, we've adjusted our patrol patterns. It's a two-pronged approach. Number one, we've increased our visibility and presence in the residential neighborhoods because of the larger number of folks in the city that are home because of the lockdown. We want to make sure that they're safe. And additionally, because some of the businesses are either on reduced hours or closed, we've instituted daily business checks at least twice every shift. Officers are doing exterior checks on just about every business in town, paying special attention to the ones that are closed.
Thank you, Chief. In addition, Chief, I know that some of these businesses have gone to two shifts to utilize their employees more effectively, similar to what the city's done in some cases. And I also saw that and talked to that the State Highway Patrol is out, and they're out stopping violators again. So I'm assuming that our people will be stopping violators and educating them as part of our the reintroduction of our safety strategy.
Absolutely, Mayor. As the businesses ramp up, the traffic's going to ramp up with people coming and going. We have already started that, getting an early start on it with making sure, number one, we're maintaining a visible presence in the high traffic areas. And number two, you know, targeting aggressive drivers and the really serious speed offenses, the ones that are potentially hazardous and causing danger. So those are the ones we're trying to get the message out that, hey, you just need to slow down and get to work in one piece.
Yep. Safety and educating those that we stop are the highest priority. So thank you. Any other questions on the ramifications on our safety forces from anyone?
Mayor, I had a question of Steve's. Is the number of runs that we make now because of the Rockside has been virtually, you know, shut down or semi-shut down. Are the number of hospital runs that have been cut down considerably, or and is there fewer runs for our residents because of the fear? I think, Mayor, you mentioned a couple of times early on in your phone announcements that people are afraid to use the emergency room because of the COVID situation. I just want to see what our numbers what do they look like?
Well, compared to last year at this time, we're down about 15% on EMS calls. That amounts to about 76 EMS calls. So, well, that seems like a lot. You know, we could make that up easily in one bad flu or two bad flu months. So it is true that people are not going to the hospital because basically we told everybody don't go to the hospital or, you know, don't overwhelm our medical services. So essentially, that's slow to ramp back up, but we are seeing an increase in call volume at this time. Not significantly, it's going to ramp up slowly, but so far, EMS-wise, it's a accounted for about 15% reduction.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chief. Any other questions?
I have one. Yes. But what about Vistas?
Can't hear you, Jim.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Better.
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, so what about Vista Springs? Are there any different to and coming from? I know nursing homes have had a rough time because of the, you know, the rough, perfect storm involved with the virus there. Any difference in terms of?
I didn't catch the end of that, but basically we've been in contact with them. We've worked out a protocol for when we arrive on scene. They're meeting us at the door. We're trying to limit our access to the, you know, the whole facility. We're just trying to meet them at certain locations when that is possible. Now, if they have a patient that's fallen, then obviously we're going to have to go to where they've been fallen. They want them to be moved. But there is a protocol for that, and they are following the state protocols.
Yeah, and one more thing is that Councilwoman Kapusta asked about the COVID impact financially, and let me give you a little data that was supplied by the finance director. Wages, both city paid and the government program, that remember that was a two-week program, amounts to $133,117.5. Supplies is about $20,000. These are all estimates, and tech supports $5,000. So right now, about $75,500, which would be what we would seek to be reimbursed once the dust settles and they pass legislation that would allow the funds that the federal government has issued to be allocated to the counties, to the cities for reimbursement. So hopefully that answers your question, Councilwoman Kapusta.
Yes, thank you, Mayor.
Any other questions on that?
Well, the only thing, Mayor, I had one question.
Good afternoon, Council Office.
I think we approved work to be done, I think, over there on Patriots Way. I think there was a,
yes.
Has any, because I went by there today.
No, there's no one here right now. Thank you. Bye-bye.
They were mobilizing. I believe they were supposed to mobilize today.
Oh, okay.
They were supposed to mobilize today, and so that's when the work will actually begin.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Then, Vice Mayor, I think at this time, based on the agenda, it'd be appropriate that Councilman Sinek give an overview of inside millage for Council to contemplate.
Very good. Ken, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity here to discuss this subject. I'm going to share my screen here. Debbie, can you give me access so I can share my screen?
Sure.
While you're doing that, I would just remind any participants who may have questions that there is a Q&A box at the bottom of the screen. You type your questions in there. They'll be recorded as part of the meeting, and we can either respond to them during the meeting or basically either follow up after if you put your questions in the Q&A box.
Ken, you're a panelist, so you should be able to share your screen.
Telling me, post disabled participant screen sharing.
Okay, but it's not giving me. Yeah. I'm making you a co-host now. And see if you can share your screen with that.
That worked. Thank you very
okay,
much.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, so hopefully you're all seeing Inside Village Strategic Planning Committee.
And excuse me for interrupting, just to let you know, if I ask ignorant questions, I'm not seeing the screen share. My screen has frozen up. Okay, thank you.
Okay, no problem. Everybody else seeing the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So what I hope to do in the next few minutes is to provide you with a summary of the ins and outs, the rules and the regulations of Inside Village. I'm going to try my best to communicate why reducing the city's inside millage will have a positive effect on the daily lives of our residents that is every bit the equal of Elmwood Park, the Civic Center / library, and the high school / shared use facility. When I try to put into words the essence of community life and independence, those are the places that come to my mind first. My statement that inside millage is as impactful and consequential to our citizens as Elmwood Park, the Civic Center, and the Fieldhouse may at first blush sound kind of crazy, and perhaps a wild exaggeration, but it isn't. It truly isn't. It is within our purview to create a new local government funding paradigm in Independence that will improve the lives of our citizens, adults and children alike, for generations to come. They say the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The next best time to plant a tree, a small sacrifice by the city today, will create a legacy that in time will rival that of Elwood Park, the Civic Center, and the Field House. So let me have a few slides to share with you that walk you through the technical and detail of all this. Let me start by saying, what is Inside Village? Inside Village is the first 10 bills of tax levied on real property. It's residences, it's the buildings on Rockside Road, it's public utility property like the CEI substation or the gas lines that throughout Independence or cell phone towers. All of that real property is subject to a property tax. And the first 10 bills of tax on that property is Inside Village. The Ohio Constitution requires that any property tax levy in excess of 10 mills has to be voted on and approved by the people. That millage not in excess of 10 mill limitation is unvoted. How is Inside Village levied? Well, it's an annual event. It may not feel like it. You know, we have tax budget's been the same since 1933, but it is an annual event. That's why every year, the school district, the city, every taxing jurisdiction in Ohio has to submit a tax budget to the County Budget Commission. It's the County Budget Commission's job to oversee all of those tax budgets, make sure that the tax rates that are listed on those tax budgets have been voted on or fall within the allotted 10 mills of inside millage. And the County Budget Commission then certifies those tax rates and sends them on to the auditor, who sends the tax bills based on those tax rates reviewed and approved by the County Budget Commission. Inside millage in Independence is currently levied as shown here. Cuyahoga County gets 1.45 mills. Metro Parks gets 5/100 of a mill. City of Independence levies 2.2 mills. And the Independence Schools levy 6.3 mills for a total of 10. Now, the Ohio Revised Code provides for something called a guaranteed minimum share of the inside millage. So this first column of numbers is the actual rate. Under the statute of 5705.31, this guaranteed minimum levy allots 1.45 to the Cuyahoga County, 5/100 to Metro Parks, 2.3 to the City of Independence, and 6.2 to the Independence Schools. So as we sit here today, the City of Independence is levying 1/10 of a mill less than its guaranteed minimum levy, and the Independence Schools is levying 1/10 of a mill more than its guaranteed minimum share. The term guaranteed minimum share is a bit of a misnomer and counterintuitive. Back in 1933, they changed what was then a 15 mil floor and reduced it to a 10 mil floor. So in that change from a 15 mil inside millage to a 10 mil, each taxing district got a pro rata share of what used to be a 15 mil inside millage. So this guaranteed minimum levy term kind of relates to what's each jurisdiction's guaranteed share of what used to be a 15 mil maximum for unvoted millage. This brings in the concept of free millage. This is not a statutory term. It's more a term of art or term of the industry, but free millage is the difference between inside millage actually levied in a given year and 10 mills. So in a taxing unit may receive inside millage if another taxing unit does not request its full guaranteed minimum levy. There's a court case that goes along that affirms that. Basically it says that if the taxing districts overlap like the Independence Schools and Independence City of Independence do, if there's free millage out there, another jurisdiction could levy that free millage. So this brings me to proposal for the city's tax budget change. So if the city levies a lesser amount of inside millage, it creates free millage. That millage can then be levied by the school. So 2019 tax rate at the city of Independence at 2.2 mils and the independent schools at 6.3. If the city were to reduce its inside millage by some amount, I put 1.6 mils here, but it could be anything. It could be zero, could be one-tenth of a mil, could be 1.6, could be all 2.2. But just for sake of example here, if the city reduced its inside millage by 1.6 mils, it would still have 6-tenths of a mil to be levied, and the 1.6 mils not levied by the city could then be levied by the school district. In dollars, what 1-tenth of a mil of inside millage is worth, it's $48,000 a year of property tax revenue at 100% margin. The total taxable property value in Independence for tax year 2019 was $484 million. 1-tenth of a mil equals 0.001, so $48,000 is the revenue that the city collects from every 1-tenth mil of the inside millage. Now, the magic of inside millage is that, one, it's unvoted. How difficult it is to pass a school levy of any kind, but inside millage is not voted. So it's up to the city council, the school board, to deal with inside millage. The other beauty of inside millage is it's not subject to House Bill 920 reduction. Typically in property taxes, as the value of the property goes up, the tax rate goes down to protect taxpayers from unvoted tax increases. That does not, House Bill 920 does not apply to inside millage. So as the tax basis, as the taxable value grows, so does the tax collections from the inside millage. Have a special advantage when it comes to inside millage because school districts are permitted to use inside millage as the repayment source for a bond. Generally speaking, a school district cannot issue any debt without voter approval. Very limited exceptions to that, but generally speaking, the school district cannot issue any debt without a vote of the people. One exception to that is bonds that are secured by, or to be repaid by inside millage levied for permanent improvements. So 1-tenth of a mil in the hands of the city of Independence is $48,000 a year of revenue. But that same 1-tenth of a mil in the hands of a school district who could use it to fund a bond for 30 years is $1 million. $48,000 to the city of Independence, $1 million to our school district. Huge multiplier effect. And again, it's unvoted. So, you know, some have asked me the question, is this a long-term solution for the school district? And the answer is yes, it is. It is essentially a one-year action by the city that will provide a long-term solution for our school. And the reason for that is something called the 20 mil floor. Every public school district in Ohio is required to levy at least 20 mils of tax on the property within its borders. Because of that 20 mil floor and our school district's already low tax rates, it protects the city, protects the school district if sometime down the road the city would change its mind about levying inside millage. So let me walk you through this example. In your first year, the city reduces its inside millage by 1.6 mils. In the next year, so that creates free millage that could be levied in the next year by the school district. In the third year, the city changed its mind and again wanted to levy the 1.6 mils of inside millage. What will happen? And I'll show you on this next slide. So, sorry, there's a lot of numbers here, but that's, if there were a simpler way to show this to you, I would. So the 20 mil floor protects the school. This is the voted tax rate of the various levies in the city of Independence, the Independence schools, and other taxing districts. That's what the voters approved in an election, was a levy for that number of mils. Now, over time, as property values increase, the tax rate decreases to levy a lesser amount. It's still delivering the same dollars to the taxing district, but the rate goes down so that the voters, the people don't get the unvoted tax increase. But back to the example. So in year 2020, the city reduces its inside millage from 2.2 to 0.6. The next year, the school district increases its levy for inside millage from 0.2 to 1.8. Now let's say in the year after that, or any year after that, the city wants to go back to 2.2 mills that it had before this all happened. What will happen is that the school district will reduce its levy for inside millage for general operating purposes, which has been 6.1. That will trigger the 20 mill floor. These two levies cannot come to a total less than 20 because of the 20 mill floor. So if this inside millage levy is reduced, this 1976 current operating expense levy will increase to bring this back up to 20 mills. You notice the school district's millage is still 35.04 in both years, but the total tax rate paid by the homeowner increases from 59.79 to 61.39. So the homeowner pays 1.6 mills more to the city of Independence. The school district is not harmed, neither collects more nor less from this change by the city. But the homeowners will have been hit with an unvoted tax increase of 1.6 mills. It's the 20 mill floor that makes this a long-term solution for the school district. My thinking on this is informed by lots of things. I know there's a lot of numbers here. I'm not going to walk you through all this, but I've done my own analysis to show what would happen if the city gave up 1.6 mills of inside millage, and what would be our cash balance, take my best guess and survey all that. And I'm not going to argue numbers or try to go through that right now, but I wouldn't be proposing this to you if I didn't think the city could handle this without any interruption in our basic services. You've probably heard me say this before, but our city for the years 2016 through 2019 has generated positive cash flow after all our expenses are paid, an average of about $16 million a year. Even in a pandemic, as we go forward, it's going to be less, but it's still a significant amount of cash, positive cash flow generated by the city, $10 million or more, after all our bills are paid. So, A, we can afford this, and so this cash flow forecast informs my thinking, as does its history. We look at, over this 36-year run, what the total revenue has been for our city and for our school district. It just illustrates the nature of income taxes versus property taxes. Generally speaking, property taxes will only increase when the voters pass a new levy. Again, it's that 20 mil floor, it's the House Bill 920. If the value goes up, the rate goes down to deliver the same total dollars to the school district or whoever gets collected property taxes. Or we see increases here in the school district, it's because a levy was passed and more money started coming in. Nature of income taxes, yeah, it has good years and it has bad years, but the trend over 36 years is clearly up. And as I think about, you know, our overall community resources, our city has a chance to grow its revenue. The only way for our school district to grow its revenue, generally speaking, is to pass a levy. That's really hard to do. And I guess I'll just conclude with that and ask if you have any questions or how I might be able to further enhance your knowledge of this.
I have a couple of questions, Ken, if I might. So we talked about if the city doesn't take their inside millage, that next year the school district can request it. They're not mandated to take it, they can request it, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, am I wrong in remembering that previously, in the last few years past when this was discussed, it did not have unanimous approval of the Board of Education?
That was a different issue, Ms. Capusa. Now I'll try to explain. Let me get back to the previous slide. That will make it...
Which, of course, I'm not seeing again. I'm sorry.
That was a different issue. That had to do with The school board, when I was on the school board, I advocated for reducing this inside village levy, the 6.1 mills, instead of making it 6.1, we would levy some of that for permanent improvements. If the school board chose to do that, it would trigger an unvoted tax increase on the people. It would provide more revenue for permanent improvements, but because, again, same reason the 20 mil floor would kick in, it would have triggered an unvoted tax increase. And ultimately, that was untenable. So we did not.
Okay. Thank you. That leads then to my second question, Councilman, and that is, did I hear you say that if the city chose to, in a future year, take back that inside millage, then the homeowners would in fact have an unvoted tax increase?
The city will have triggered an unvoted tax increase on the homeowner and all property owners.
So even though we said that we didn't want to ever bring an unvoted tax increase to our residents, that is exactly what could happen if the city found itself in a position that necessitated, for whatever unknown reason, to request that inside millage, correct?
It could. And my experience, Councilwoman Kapusta, is that cities live on income taxes. Cleveland raised its income tax rate to 2.5% 2 or 3 years ago. So, what used to be a going kind of the standard rate for income tax in cities used to be 2% across the board. Well, it's now up to 2.5% in the city of Cleveland, and I think it's headed even higher. If the city of Independence were to get into the spot where it felt like it needed to create revenue, the source to do that is going to be through the income tax, not through property tax. So I'm quite certain that while the city could do it, that would be the worst way to go about raising additional revenue.
Right, and if the city were to potentially increase the city income tax, that would of course put us at probably not as opportune a position for economic development.
Well, frankly, it's a great deal for our residents because that money gets collected from people who don't live here, quite frankly.
Right, I understand that, but I'm saying, right, but since our business community pays the largest percent of our taxes overall to the community, if we were to be less attractive to them because of the higher tax increase, and if that translated into less businesses coming, that would ultimately impact our residents as well.
Sure, we have a competitive advantage right now, and there's, I can't even imagine, it's not in the cards right now to even ponder an income tax increase. We're not headed there. We're a long, long way from that. But it is possible somewhere down the road. And again, I see market forces driving that more than a particular need, a first people need from the city of Independence. Where we have the benefit of a very large tax base with a very small population to serve, and that advantage is not going to change anytime soon.
And I think if I understood correctly, our decrease from the state of Ohio to our district, which I know we're one of the highest in the area, if not the state, but I think it totaled out to about $351,000.
Yes, $351,000 is my understanding of the reduction in the state funding to the Independence Local Schools.
Because our state funding as part of our total budget is about 3% to the schools, correct? So in other words, the school's total budget, the state portion of that is about 3%.
I think it's dropping from 3%, from 3%.
Now it'll drop, yes, but it was previously. Yes. Thank you.
It was 3% before the $350,000.
Correct, yes, okay, thank you. I just want to make sure I understood, thank you.
Yeah, that's also changed my thinking on this, is that our schools get little or no funding from the state. We are about as private of a public school system as you'll find anywhere. The level of state and federal support for our school district is approaching zero. We still are a public school district, but it's all coming from local sources. We, the people of Independence, are the ones who are supporting our schools in toto.
Very Any other questions for Ken?
There are two questions outstanding from one of the attendees, if anyone wants to read those.
Can you read those, Debbie?
Sure, I can read those. Both of them are from Amanda Jaranowski. And the first one is, Mr. Sinek, would you support a school bond issue if the city is assuming part of the cost of the project, but through a different funding mechanism than inside millage? Same outcome, but different funding source?
Let me stop my screen share here.
Okay.
So if there were another way for the city to make direct grants to the school district, I would certainly be in favor of that. But there is no way for the school, for the city of Independence, to directly contribute money to Independence local schools. You can't make a charitable gift to the school district or anybody else for that matter. That is not within the city's purview to just give money away like that. However, this is a planning strategy, reducing the tax that we're not necessarily obligated to levy. There's a consequence to that that has a very positive effect for our school district. So this reduction of inside millage, while the result is an increase in revenue for our school district, it is not a direct gift from the city to the school district, because that is not legally permissible. That would be outside the charter of the city of Independence to give money away to the school district or anybody else.
And the second question is from Amanda Jaranowski. You are assuming that the council will want to renew the inside millage every single year to avoid the 20 mil floor unvoted tax increase. How can you ensure that this would be the case? Should Independence run into serious economic hardship, couldn't the city council simply justify the non-renewal to residents by claiming this is not their fault and it was a flawed agreement made decades ago, which is being rectified?
I would point out that the city collects in total about $1 million in property tax revenue. The city's overall revenue, not including some special capacity grant thing type of things, is probably about $42 million a year. So we're talking $1 million of property tax revenue across a total revenue base of about $42 million. So the property taxes are not the big ticket item for our city. It is about the fourth line item, maybe, or lower, if you're to stratify where the revenue comes from. Property taxes is a very small part of the city's budget. And as I sort of mentioned before, if the city were ever to find itself in a spot to where it needs to raise revenue, raising income taxes and raising things like hotel taxes is the preferable way to go, because that money doesn't get paid by people who live here. There's a strong incentive to either in this council or any future one, to either raise excise taxes like hotel and bed taxes or income taxes long before trying to chase the relatively small dollars to be had for the city from property taxes. And that's why I feel quite comfortable saying this is a very reliable revenue source for the schools. And I think for our community, we can all rest assured that there's not a powerful incentive for a future council to want to undo this, because the dollars are just not that compelling. The dollars mean far more to our school district because of their ability to leverage them. As I showed, $48,000 from one-tenth of a mill can be turned into $1 million of cash to fund permanent improvements. Much the inside millage is much more valuable to our school district than it is to our city.
And one other question, when you're saying for inside millage, was I correct in hearing you say, without seeing your screen, that it was with the school district at that point would be getting bonds? Is that correct?
So there we go. Okay. Yes, the school district could use that revenue source to borrow money. So if the city knows it has $48,000 a year coming in, the question becomes, how much can we borrow using that $48,000 a year for the next 30 years as the repayment source? When you do the present value on that at current interest rates, which is 2.2%, it works out to about $1 million for 1/10 of a mil.
So they would be able to borrow on money that was not guaranteed, correct? Since the city had the right to make a decision on that money every year. That doesn't affect borrowing?
It is guaranteed. Essentially, the school district would be committing itself to always levying that for permanent improvements throughout the term of the bond.
So going back with that unvoted millage to the unvoted tax to the residents, okay.
So the school district has inside millage that's levied for general operating, and it has inside millage that's levied for permanent improvements. If it were to go out and get a bond using inside millage that's levied for permanent improvements, you would have to maintain that levy for permanent improvements throughout the life of the bond. If there would be any reduction in inside millage by the school district in the future, it would come out of the inside millage that's levied for general operating. Clear as mud, right? Vern gets it.
Well, very good. I think we're getting near our 5:30 time here, and Ken, that was informational. I will need time to digest it and kind of review it.
It is complex. It takes a long time to get your head around it. I appreciate the opportunity to share this with you. It's taken me 4 years to figure this out, and you're not going to get it in 20 minutes or however long I've been speaking about it. This is, as I mentioned, the tax budget is an annual process. So as long as I breathe air, this will be, you know, number one priority on my list, because this is a great deal for the people of our community. To be able to share our resources, to be able to fund our schools, to make more with less, is everything that is good, that good government is about.
Very good. Thank you, Ken. I appreciate the time and effort you put into that presentation.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. I think, Greg, are you here with us, Mayor?
Yes.
I think we're at the point now that we probably need to adjourn our strategic planning meeting and to meet the timelines to get into executive session, so we have to at least till 6 o'clock.
Okay, department heads, thank you very much for your support this evening. Councilman Senek, thank you for your presentation. At this point, those attendees that are not participants, we're going to go into executive session. So thank you for taking your time to be here as residents and concerned citizens. And we will be convening a executive session for pending legal matters. And if there's anything else, Vice Mayor?
We need a motion, Mayor, in a second. Go into executive session for pending
legal matters. I'll make the motion to Greg, I'll make the motion to go into executive session.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, thank you everyone for participating, and we will reconvene in the executive session.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you.
Greg, I'm going to make you a host now.
Okay, Deb.
Okay, you'll need to admit everybody else into the meeting.
Okay, Deb.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Deb.
Good afternoon, council office. For the executive session, okay, wait a minute. Executive session, I am forwarding it to you right now. Okay? All right, bye.